What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only show that's number one with Jubilee and our friend Camilla, who saw a picture of Paul and said, "That bald guy, who is he?" I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. Let's get big factin'. Let's get no cappin'.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
What up, what up, what up?
Not much, bro. What up with you? What up with you?
Not much at all. I am hanging.
You doing a coffee this late?
Chai.
Oh, okay.
But I guess it is still caffeinated.
It is, yeah.
How do you feel about, like, caffeinated teas? Because I know some people are like, oh, I'd still be up all night, but I don't know. I feel like the caffeine's so low I can drink one right before bed and not feel it.
Yeah, I don't really count tea.
Yeah.
Tea's never done me wrong the way coffee does. I was just listening to a thing about how matcha, the supply chain is effed up because it's actually pretty hard to produce. And they're like actually running out of matcha to use in like Japanese temples because they're sending it out everywhere else.
What do they use it for in the temples?
Yeah, it's like an ayahuasca thing. If you take enough of it, you eventually see God.
I think in that case, wouldn't it be Shinto and wouldn't it be sea spirits?
I don't know.
Well, maybe educate yourself before you come on this podcast. You know the number one rule on this podcast? We educate our audience.
The number one rule of this podcast. I forgot about that. Our core tenant.
Our core tenant.
All right, welcome to ShintoCast.
That'd be a cool podcast. I would listen to a podcast about Shinto.
I'd listen to a few episodes. That sounds like one of those podcasts where they come up with the idea and have to abandon it 12 episodes in because they realize that it doesn't have legs.
Wait, you think the history of Shinto doesn't have enough meat there for
You thought it was going to be the history of Shintoism? I thought it was going to be a modern take on Shintoism.
Oh, a modern take. Oh, so it's two white dudes with big beards.
I mean, hopefully. Mm. If it's a podcast.
I thought it was going to be two Japanese men talking about Shinto. Adrian, how would that sound? Go.
Hey, my name's Dave, and my name's Marco Barbaro, and we're here today to talk about Shintoism and its history. Its legacy, where it's been, and where it's going, and it's imperative that when we talk about Shintoism, that we invite the expert, which is why we brought in our Chinese friend Paul to come talk about it on this episode. Paul, come in.
Oh no, you flipped it on me. Fuck! And I can't do the same joke you did, so I'm just gonna have to do a very offensive Chinese accent starting now.
Bleep.
I've been listening to more Dan Soder recently.
And interesting,
man,
choice.
He pulls out his Asian accent all the time for fact that that's gotten so many people canceled in like the last handful of years. I'm like, you saw what it did to your close friend Shane. you're just gonna try it too.
Well, that was also partially a slur, right? I think there's kind of like there's an added thing there, right?
I didn't really know the whole story.
You thought he was just singing along to a rap song and just happened to do a Chinese accent? The way they do our boy dirty. And now he's hosting Who Got the Last Laugh.
Who got the last laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's why Dan... Also, I guess Dan probably never wanted to be on SNL, so he just doesn't care. I doubt this like really freaked him out.
I don't really know that much about him, but he doesn't really seem like that was his career path.
He's really funny, man.
Have you seen that Marc Maron special, Making Waves?
Only the clip where he makes fun of Theo Vaughn for having... What does he say? If Hitler was around today, I know he would be a guest on Theo Vaughn's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
Hopefully, the rest of the special is better, but...
Hopefully. I remember I watched a Marc Maron special in high school, and I remember thinking that he was kind of dumb then. That he was definitely, like, pretends to be smart, dumb guy even back then.
Yeah, what can you do?
Kill him, murder him, silence him.
He's had a lot of deep conversations, Adrian.
Yeah, open the gates. When I was hanging out with Emily and we were talking politics, I kept doing that quote about like, well, we can't let our enemies have weapons because weapons are dangerous and ideas are more dangerous than weapons. Why would we let our enemies have ideas?
I guess that does bring us to, we saw each other this weekend.
Yeah.
How was being a representative for your DSA chapter at the national convention?
Pretty low key. I think me and the other delegate were pretty much in agreement on everything. Maybe not agreement with what our chapter wanted, but hey, they didn't give us enough input if they needed it. It was fine. Very procedural. I definitely left. It always mirrors union stuff. So, like, I definitely left having a much better idea of what all the caucuses were, or, like, the internal parties, and knowing which ones I find annoying and don't like. I'm going to have to do, like, a report back on it at the end of the month during our monthly meeting, and I do not look forward to having to revisit everything and figure out what happened, because I'm not going to lie, a good bit of it was kind of a blur.
Yeah, you were so drunk during the whole thing.
I don't know, man. Robert's Rules of Order. They're not called Robert's Rules of Having Fun. I'll tell you that.
The way people reference them, it's almost like with, read up on Robert's Rules. It's really important. Uh-huh. We all know about Robert's Rules. And I'm like, who is this Robert? What'd he ever do for me?
That's a good point.
He ain't fam.
Yeah. You're not the boss of me now. You're not. That's what you'd play that going into convention. I got to see Hassan Piker and Emma Vigilant, so that was cool, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. And the president of my union. That was the only person I actually wanted a picture with.
Which one had a better aura? Who had more clout?
You know, I don't want to say anything about that, because maybe it has something to do with how people are socialized in this world, depending on if they're born female or male. But I will say, racially, that Turkish man's got riz. He's got an aura around him, dude. He's a big tree trunk of a man.
You ran the other direction when you first saw him because you were concerned he might try to eat you?
A little bit, yeah. I thought I looked like a golden nugget.
So you just saw him. You didn't get a picture with him. You said there was a long line for photos.
I just wasn't interested. I guess I could have mobbed him at one point when he was walking across the convention floor. It wouldn't be important to me, and I don't know who I would send it to that would be impressed. Maybe it'd be a good Bumble photo, actually. That might be a good way to, like, kind of sneak in your politics, but I don't know.
But then, honestly, like, what if
then you're the,
like,
ugliest person in your photo,
of...
and you never want to do that.
Also, I guess red flag wouldn't be the right way to put it, but if they were a big fan of Hassan, I'd be like, that's weird. Why do you have so much free time? How are you watching Twitch?
How are you? That's pretty poggers. I don't know.
That's poggers, bro.
That's poggers, bro. Yeah, that's maybe the other thing, is they would attract more men that are annoying than people that I actually find attractive.
And you don't find annoying men attractive.
Not really.
You're just going to say that right in front of me?
Ooh. Paul, there's a reason we separate business and romance on this pod.
I like that you didn't say that I wasn't annoying when I did that self-deprecating joke. I was teeing you up to tell me that I'm not annoying.
I'm not going to challenge your identity and how you choose to identify yourself. That's not up to me.
Well, I take it back. I want to see if you're a real friend, and you didn't even try to big up me.
I'm not a yes man, I'll say that. And I'm not a no man. I'm a maybe man.
Anything else from the convention?
Oh, from the convention? Definitely not. From Chicago, it's all right. It's pretty big. I have pretty middling opinions about it. It was hot and humid.
Say more.
It was hot and humid. I was sticky the whole time. Great Airbnbs, though. It's a very diverse city. It was cool in that way. Rashida Tlaib spoke a lot about Detroit, despite the fact that she was in Chicago. One of me and Emily's comments.
She's a Michigan rep.
I mean, yes, but it is weird to go to Chicago and talk about Detroit the whole time.
That's who she represents. That's who she's working for.
But you're in Chicago talking to a bunch of people who are not from Detroit. And she should represent all of us.
Oh, okay. As a DSA rep. She should represent DSA more than Mish.
Yeah. Are there any big shout-outs? Shout-out to Maxwell's. Shout-out to Connie's. Pretty good food city. It is a pretty, like, affordable food city. I will say that.
Shout-out to Becca and Emily.
Shout-out to Bex and Ems. All right, yeah. Anything else? Anything exciting happened since you got back? Or were you just meal prep? Well, not meal prepping, but grocery shopping and getting your stuff back together.
Just been hanging.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not going to be long till I'm gone again. I have a big beach trip coming up, not this weekend, but next.
A BBT?
Yeah.
With the fam?
With the fam.
Or is it one of those things where when you go on the trip, we all fam?
We all fam. That's what I meant. I was talking about the sea turtles.
You're always shining lights at night so they can't find their way home.
Yeah, how else am I going to see them?
That makes sense. That's true. That makes me assume that it is Charleston that you're going to?
Yeah.
Am I giving away your assassination coordinates, or will this come out after you're already there?
Yeah, Israel's gonna do a targeted strike.
Could be. Are there any children at that beach?
Jesus.
I guess the baby turtles.
And they can't stand for that. The IDF is pissed.
Yeah. Nice. I did trivia last night, and then I'm going to go see Weapons tomorrow, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else on the media roundup tip?
You know, I brought this in, or I was supposed to bring this in because I watched it like a month ago, but let me see. I wrote up a whole write-up to make sure that it was interesting enough, but now I don't want to read it all because it was pretty long. Because it is two series. Zero Calcare, Italian cartoonist from Rome. He has two series on Netflix. They're both limited series of 6 episodes. One is Tear Across the Dotted Line. The other one is This World Won't Tear Me Down, although I've heard the translation might be better as This World Won't Make Me a Bad Person. Very interesting. Apparently it loses a lot in translation to English, and I still really liked it. It is made by a cartoonist, so it's very zany. It's very like, we're having a conversation that's awkward. I'm going to represent it as us being Star Wars Jedis having a showdown. Like, that kind of, like, referential humor. It's very referential, especially to American stuff. He is kind of just like an 80s nerd. But yeah, I don't know. Both really interesting. Both a little bit dark and a little bit sad, because they do kind of deal with some interesting themes, both politically and, like, interpersonally. And James Acaster's in the second one. So, yeah, if you want to watch it, I suggest it. It doesn't take up that much of your time. It's pretty funny, and it's very quickly paced.
I've been watching the reboot, the Hulu reboot to King of the Hill. And if you're a fan of the original, probably worth it. But it's not as laugh-out-loud funny as the original, but it doesn't, like, do it a disservice.
He's never like, that boy ain't right.
The first episode was a little heavy on the, like, ugh, society's like this nowadays. It almost felt like an episode of Tulsa King, which I don't think you've watched, but it was very much like the Hills. They did the plot point where they went to Saudi Arabia for, like, a decade, so it's like they come back and they're learning about
all
this.
Yeah, it makes sense why they wouldn't know what's going on then, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they come back and they don't know about all the newfangled apps and... And he has an Uber driver, and he's confused about how you interact with an Uber driver. It's like the first episode was a lot of that sort of stuff. And they're kind of playing into that, but I'm glad it's moved on from that, because that's very boring humor that, I mean, we've, you know, like, if you've seen one version of that joke, you've seen it all. And just them doing it over and over, I'm like, I've seen all this. It's just Tulsa King.
Yeah, I liked it better the first time when they called it Tulsa King. I liked it better the first time when they called it King of the Hill original.
Yeah, yeah, back in the original King of the Hill when they were doing jokes about Uber.
And gender-neutral bathrooms, yeah.
Oh yeah, gender-neutral bathrooms was one of the jokes. Yeah, you got it. You basically got the entire idea.
Well, I've watched Johnny Two Cellos cover it, so I actually know, like, what's going on in the show, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm not just psychic, although I wish I was.
Although no pronoun jokes, which, like, good on them for being mature enough to avoid that.
Good for them. Because Hank Hill wouldn't care about that.
Hank Hill didn't go, my pronoun is propane.
Can I give a quick shout out to Hank Trill, the Spotify artist who does trap music in the voice of Hank Hill?
Only if he doesn't use AI.
He doesn't. This is a project from a while ago.
Okay. Shout out Hank Trill.
Do you want to get into the theme?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. A pretty big one. Produced YouTube. Paul, do you want to break that down for us?
Yeah, I think the idea started with us being like, let's talk about Jubilee, since that sits heavy on Adrian's mind.
Mm-hmm.
While we were thinking about the idea, we're like, let's make it broader. Let's make it, you know, when a YouTube video clearly has, like, actual production value and backing.
Yeah.
Usually from, like, a old school or a traditional media company, or maybe a new media company that just is more polished or traditional in its approach. Like, it's not really stuff that's trying to look homemade or like a vlog. So we kind of bundled all that up and said we're gonna call this what was the name, like, professional YouTube content.
I think just produced YouTube is what we said on
produced YouTube. So some of the examples I was thinking of, like GQ videos where they're like, a tour of my house, or 80 questions. I forget Vogue and GQ which one does which, or whatever. I think Vogue does the 80 questions, or like those channels that do like 30 Indian aunties try each other's.
I don't think they're fitting 30 in there, but yeah.
Indian aunties trying each other's palak paneer, or Nigerian men try each other's jollof rice.
Well, Nigerian dads, they have to have spilled their seed in a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, on the plane ride back to Sacramento, I got a screen on a United flight, which was surprising, but very good. And, like, on the selection of TV shows, there was, like, YouTube videos from Epicurious and YouTube videos from, oh, what's the other ones that are like that? GQ, yeah. So, yeah, like, that kind of thing, where it's almost, like, TV-level production because it's actually got some money behind it, and you can throw on an episode of it, and it almost feels like TV, I guess.
Epicurious, they do have a couple of them. One of the ones that gets me is the Ed Curie videos they do. He's the guy that does the really hot peppers.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
South Carolina.
I do not care for him as a personality. What? And when he speaks on these products, he doesn't seem like an expert to me. He seems a little bit like a charlatan. I'm not going to lie. Wow. I want Epicurious to stop making Ed Curie thing. I don't. Maybe I'm not seeing what everybody else is seeing.
Wow.
He seems kind of like a fake.
Seems like somebody who's making the pepper. I don't know what you mean.
When he's taste testing or sampling these things, he talks about them like he's, I don't know, like he's an expert on like the end products. He'll be like, oh, I like this about it. I think he's just kind of guesstimating at what he thinks would be cool to say.
Oh, wow.
I don't get the sense that he's actually. I don't think he's got the refined palate he's claiming to have.
So you're saying that South Carolina's own, South Carolina's own Ed Curie is a clout chasing, slack jawed charlatan.
I didn't say slack jawed.
You might
sure
as well
he's a
have.
Nice person.
You might as well have. You might as well have said if you have an accent like that, you
shouldn't
be able to speak intelligently
expertise.
About anything.
I don't think he has. No, I didn't say anything about him speaking intelligently. I said I don't think he has the expertise that he's projecting himself as having. I'm sure he's a great. What would you call it? Cultivationist? He's great at cultivating hot peppers.
Okay.
I don't think he has this palate and the expertise on tasting the peppers.
You don't
that
think
he
he's eaten millions of peppers?
Epicurious as having. Yeah. I'm sure he's eaten a lot of peppers. Doesn't mean he knows how to judge these products.
I would be skeptical that he's pitching himself and that he's not being recruited by these publications.
Have you ever watched the videos? He's not that interesting at talking about these things.
Yeah, not really. I wouldn't say the things you said about him, but interesting. The other thing that was on the flight was the GQ Essentials, which we've already done a full episode on, in the same way that we've already done an episode on Odd Man Out, but there are other Jubilee video types, archetypes, and I think Odd One Out is by no means their most viewed. They have recently gained popularity with the Surrounded series of one person versus 20 opposites. They have the Spectrum series where it's like six gay men. Do they all agree about stuff? They have the Radar one where it's like, here's a whole bunch of people that may be gay or not. Can you tell which ones are gay? They have the ones of what else?
I always forget that the Radar and Odd Man Out aren't the same thing because they're usually like pitched in such like they're in the same room and it's like also like a tiered like level thing.
Oh yeah, they have ranked where people rank themselves and then find out the actual ranking of whatever they're looking for. There's some viral moments of that.
Oh, I remember the one. Did we watch it together? Did you make me watch the ranked where it's like sex workers and who charges the most?
No, but I probably did watch that one. That is interesting.
I guess so. It also just feels mean to the people because it's like whoever thinks that they get paid the most. Yeah.
It feels like that Hannibal Buress bit about like when they published how much the university paid to have him perform there. He was like, thanks for making sure I can never charge more than that in the future.
I guess a little bit, but with a even more humiliating twist of them also publishing what they paid every other comedian and showing them that they paid more to other people than you.
There is Middle Ground, which is the classic, trans conservatives versus trans liberals. What can they agree on in the middle ground? It's terrible. It's awful. A lot of viral moments from that one as well. And then, I don't know. I'd have to look at their YouTube page to remember what the other ones are. But those are the basic gist. It's always the same kind of thin veil of we're trying to have people get in a room and talk to each other, and that's fundamentally good no matter what, which is absolute bullshit and for idiots, and anyone who actually believed that was a fucking idiot.
The reason you enjoy it is from like a meta or ironic standpoint where you're just like, it's funny how stupid this is.
Odd One Out isn't really problematic like that, but the other ones I don't actually watch. I don't think I've ever watched a full episode of Middle Ground or like Spectrum or all those ones that are supposed to be the empathy building.
Surrounded really does create viral moments, but imagining myself watching an hour of these people doing that is, mind-numbing.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch Ed Curry rank hot sauces.
Ooh, six Spice Lords versus one Secret Wimp. Because that's the only one that's really a game. I guess the Radar one's kind of a game sometimes. I think I might have sent you the clip of, sometimes they don't go viral, but they're just clips that you kind of like on your own and send out. The one where they had Uncle Roger and two other Asian people try and figure out if people were Asian or not. And they ask one guy where he goes to school, and he says, University of California, Davis. And he's like, Asian. That's an Asian place to go. I was like, that's funny. So it really is. Or I guess I should say it the way Uncle Roger said it. No, never mind. Yeah. I won't.
No, I think you could talk Roger.
No. I'm going to talk how Nigel Ong talks. I guess he's British. I should say British. Asian. You're very Asian if you go to UC Davis. Yeah, but actually, that's funny because my original pitch of what Produce YouTube is like doesn't really fit the Jubilee mold, because that's not TV quality content by any means, but it is very produced. Like, they're hiring people. People are interviewing to be on the show, and they're, like, putting together people together to, like, in a soundstage to do this shit. And, like, you know, yeah, it's very, like...
It wouldn't have ever appeared on TV, but I think because TV never got that desperate, not because TV is above it.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not trying to like hold some kind of standard of the of TV's quality, but yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things that count. Obviously, there's like a lot of cooking content that counts, but that almost seems like a part in a way.
Like Bon Appetit, you have, what else?
Well,
you have
not as much anymore, but The Children of Bon Appetit, I think they're getting a lot less views nowadays.
Oh, that doesn't mean they're any less produced. They're still making the exact same content. And then, like, you know, the YouTubers with streaming platforms, like your BuzzFeeds, your Watcher, your Try Guys, all that shit.
I'm scrolling through my YouTube right now.
Let's see. Andrew Tate. Let's see. Joe Rogan. Chris MD. I guess we can count that. That is a... He's a soccer YouTuber from England who, like, he has editors, he has writers. I remember hearing an interview with him once where he's like, yeah, I freelance people to just come up with crazy ideas for my content, and we meet every week, and they just pitch me ideas, and that's, like, a thing that I pay for. It's, like, a crazy amount of production value that goes into his little soccer videos.
NPR, Tiny Desk.
Yeah. You got your dropouts. I guess that's technically more of a... Well, actually, yeah, like, I already said YouTubers with streamers, so yeah. And then maybe the only other one that I actually subscribe to are Nature and Science. So produced videos about the biggest, discoveries going on in science right now.
Yeah, that's true. I watch PBS Space Time and channels like that where, what are the ones like Vsauce and Veritasium?
Yeah, very highly produced. Clearly have a team of editors, probably have a team of writers.
Now, do you have any overarching ideas? What do you like? What do you not like?
I don't know. I like a well-produced video for free on YouTube. I'm not mad at that.
Sure.
The cooking stuff's usually pretty good. It's very good, like, background content.
I don't know. They're mostly good. I like that, unlike TV, the fast-forward and the skip options are more readily available. Makes it a lot more tolerable than that type of content.
There is a disconnect, though, then in that my TV, if I watch it downstairs on YouTube, it doesn't handle skipping around very well. It gets really annoyed by that. And so it really makes it stark when I start watching something of like, oh, yeah, this is the kind of video that I wouldn't actually sit through. This is the type of video where I'm usually skipping around. And that becomes very obvious where I'm like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't normally watch this all the way through. I'm going to go back and watch a different video.
Yeah, it's interesting with these types of YouTube videos, right? Because the whole... Something that's a very common thing people say about YouTube is like, oh, people like it because it feels less produced, because you feel like this connection to the creator, because it feels like they're your friend, because it's them just with a camera shooting in their
room. Why watch a professional review food about something when you can watch Pro ZD's wife make little comments behind the camera while she's filming him eating a bunch of food as your friend?
Yeah,
you know?
The opposite of produced content. Somebody like Pro ZD who's very clearly just at home making stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it goes against what people often call like the main ethos of something like YouTube, but I don't know. I find myself watching just as much of it as other people, so I'm not I don't think that really resonates with me 100%.
I guess it goes back to TV quality content where, like, I don't have satellite, so it's kind of nice to have something kind of cool like that to watch. Do you have a strong opinion about, are we counting TV that makes it to YouTube? Are we counting Daily Show or Jimmy Kimmel? No. Do you have any strong opinions about Jimmy Kimmel?
No, I think for the same reason we wouldn't count music videos, because it's not produced for YouTube.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Yeah, I'll allow it. But watch yourself. So overall, a good thing for the YouTube space, or do you think it's harming actual creators?
Oh, I don't know or care, really.
Wow, okay. You're coming for people.
I don't think it's harming actual creators, right? Like,
they're not substitute goods?
Yeah, they're not really substitute goods. I guess it is funny when somebody clearly tries to hide the fact that something is really produced, but...
Oh, you mean like Johnny Harris?
Who's Johnny Harris?
Oh, he's hated in leftist circles. He's like a lib dude who like does a lot of political content.
Oh.
He has a lot of really fancy editing where like a map does something cool. And he's also a CIA
and that's
op.
Why he's hated?
No. He's hated for being a CIA op.
In leftism, we like it when things pan right and left. I don't want any animations crumpling up.
Slideshow animation. That's the animation of the people.
That's the proletariat's animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're really taken away from each other. I think people are subbed to what they want to watch. If you want to watch like a vlogger sit in their room and talk about their life, that's so different than a Vogue video.
That's never been a written principle of mine, but in general, I watch enough of some of these like Bon Appetit's, Epicurious's, where they get recommended to me pretty consistently, and I don't like necessarily like they know when a new one's out and that I'll probably be interested in it, but I don't subscribe because it's like they don't need me. I don't need to be adding to their numbers.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think I subscribe to. I do subscribe to some of them. Like I subscribe to like Amelia's Chicken Shop Date.
Oh
or
yeah, you didn't get
like
to break down Chicken Shop Date. What was your take on that?
Huh. I mean, it's just like a classic interview show, but made for YouTube, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've made fun of like the pretty constant editing of someone just frying some fries for a second after a question, but yeah.
Yeah, but I like it. If I made fun of it, I think it's more just because like it's something to notice, but I don't think it's like, it doesn't trouble me. I think it troubles you.
No, I'm not emotional. You're emotional. Look at you. Emotional.
I do like how quality the audio is for those scenes. Like, it becomes an ASMR video where you hear the crackling, like, in the left
like
and right channel separated.
Yeah.
It's like, why did they put the mic so close to that oil?
And then just a jarring cutback to Amelia being like, so would you fuck me?
And the person is casually mentioning that they have a girlfriend or wife, and her going, oh, so you mentioned you had a wife. Interesting.
Interesting that you'd be on this date.
No cap.
All right, what you got for us, Paul?
I'm bringing in the column Dear Prudence, which we bring in a lot. Janae Desmond Harris's run as Dear Prudy. I'm just going to jump right into this question from August 25th, 2022. Dear Prudence, I am a middle-aged white woman with an East Indian name. I am concerned about appropriation and walking around basically embodying a living microaggression. While my parents and I have close connections to India, and my Indian godparents suggested the name, nobody knows that when they meet me. They just meet a white woman with an Indian name. Worse, I've been asked more than once what my name was before I changed it, so people are apparently assuming I'm the one who's made this choice. Am I embodying racism? Should I change my name to something Western? I worry about this every day. I don't want to cause pain just by introducing myself. Please help. Sign, not Lakshmi, but kinda.
And this is produced YouTube?
What's everybody's favorite Jubilee video concept?
Well, mine's Odd One Out.
This is Odd One Out. Is she Indian? Is she not?
Okay, so 7.7 billion some Indian, some not people, and one not Indian person. Okay. All right. Sounds good to me. All right, what are your thoughts?
The urgency with which they're asking the question that they've presumably grown up with, that name.
Yeah.
That's kind of what throws me off, is the concern and urgency for something where it's like, you've had this name forever. Why is this now just like, feel like it's causing you this distress? Maybe because it's 2022 and maybe like there's like BLM. Mm. No, this is still a little late for the BLM protests, right?
Well, maybe they're just now hearing about it.
2022. I'm trying to think. What were the height of the BLM protests?
Well, yeah, you're right. Maybe it's around that time of that kind of reckoning. I don't know if we can keep this story, but when I was...
I feel like we should keep the idea, so just reintroduce it in a different way. Just
that's what I have to... Okay. Hey, Paul, you know... Hey, Paul, you know... Random thought. You know when white people say all white people are inherently racist? Maybe that's what this person needs to embrace, is the fact that they're racist no matter what their name is.
Mm.
And that their life is a microaggression no matter what.
Yeah. But wouldn't that be like if you told somebody not to say the N-word and a third person came up and was like, actually, all white people are inherently racist, so it's okay for them to say the N-word, because honestly, they would have been racist either way. Like, isn't there levels to this game? Isn't there levels to this racism shit?
Potentially, but this person was...
Somebody being like, I hate lynching, and somebody else being like, well, actually, there's a lot of microaggressions today, so you gotta understand, like, you know, you can't judge the lynchers too much. Everybody's racist.
There's levels to it. Yeah, sometimes it does get used like that. I do like, I was a little bit confused by their writing, in that I thought that they were saying that they have changed their name. I didn't realize that they were saying, I haven't changed my name, and people assume that I purposely changed it to what it is. That does make it seem like you're actively being a bad person, if that's what people think of you. Which, you can correct them, they're wrong. I mean, you know, you can live with that satisfaction, but...
It seems like somebody whose parents probably worked in India...
Yeah.
Or lived there when she was born. I mean, the Indian godparents, like, there's some connection. And presumably more than just like a, oh, we happen to live there connection. Because to name your kid, you'd think, like, you have some respect or admiration for the culture.
Yeah, of course. They were the ambassador for Modi.
Mm, and they love Modi.
They do. Yeah, I don't know. We're getting to that name nerd stuff that I kind of like, where people get really annoying about this. It's a better name than Atlas.
I was going to say, this reminds me of that debate I think we had during the names episode about...
Her name's not Cohen.
Yeah, yeah. Can other people control or dictate what names are or are not off-bound?
Yeah.
And so in that episode, it was about the name Cohen, because some Jewish people consider it like a sacred name that can only be given to people with ancestors who were that religious title. In this case, is it cultural appropriation for a white woman to have an Indian name? You know, it is one of those classic things where almost certainly the only people who are going to give you a hard time are going to be, rightfully or wrongly, like whether or not you think somebody should appropriate another culture's name. I think it's going to be Americans. Almost everybody in India is probably going to be like, oh, that's rad. That's cool. Your parents like our country so much.
You're doing one of those videos or whatever where you go around asking a bunch of Indian people how they feel about the name, and then you go show the woke scold whites.
No, because I don't really like, I don't usually buy that argument, because it's always like, yeah, but they don't live in America. I mean, it's usually like second generation people who grew up around Americans that feel a certain type of way about it. That obviously, if you're an Indian around all Indians, you're just gonna be like, oh, that person in America, that's kind of quirky, okay. It's usually like an Indian American here might be like, I don't know, feel some sort of way about Americans appropriating a name. It's still crazy to blame the person given the
name. They'd be like, how dare you take an Indian name like Sam? That's my name. I'm a true Indian.
Oh, yeah. Is that your thing? They couldn't get angry about it because they take white names so often?
I was just picking an Indian person that we both know. And them being like, you can't have that name. That's an Indian name.
It is interesting to go the other way with it. Like, my parents being like, oh, we'll name him Paul because that'll probably be convenient for him growing up in Canada and America. Versus a white parent in America being like, oh, we're going to call her Lakshmi because that's rad.
Yeah, it's a beautiful name.
Yeah. Well, her name isn't actually Lakshmi, just something like it.
That's true. She narrowed it down, because I know it's not that. Go by your middle name? Go by a nickname? Do anything?
So you think she should change her name because of the concern about racism? I feel like if it's the racist in the situation, if it is racist, are your parents, right? It's not you. You were given the name.
Yeah, but people think you chose the name. So it's do you want to have a life of inconvenience and feeling weird about things, or do you want to just make your life easier? What do you want? Mm. Are you proud of this name, or do you not actually care that much?
How much do you associate with the name? I don't know. I wouldn't change. If it became widely considered that Paul was a racist name, I would still feel a little bit I don't want to change my name. That's my name. People are kind of
There's rumors.
What?
People have been saying. There's been some chatter around town.
What?
Yeah.
Which Paul? Who did something
Jake
wrong?
Jake Paul ain't doing much for you guys. And Logan Paul.
I thought they had a little bit of like a juxtaposed thing going on, a duality.
It turns out they're pretty in unison.
One was anti-racist.
Yeah.
I thought one was woke. Woke Paul.
They have a third brother who's neutral. They have a third brother who's just like, no politics here.
I'm surprised so many people are confidently asserting that she's not Indian. Indian is one of those like North Indian and Parsi people, and it's like with somebody being half or not half, it's like if I saw a completely white person, I wouldn't be sure that they weren't Indian. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but you'd bring out the calipers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be sure, so I'd have to make sure. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. It's always interesting to me when people are so confident about something like that. But I don't know. I guess maybe if she's like blonde hair, blue eyes. But even then, there's always like a weird situation where it's like one parent's genes just won out and somebody's half. And just it's kind of hard to tell.
So what's the advice?
I say live with your name. I wouldn't feel like it was racist. And it was given to me anyway.
My advice is when you order from Starbucks and they ask your name, just give them the name Solidarity Forever so that you show them that you're supporting their unionization campaign. That way you don't have to use your real name.
And then when they write it on the cup, their boss comes and fires them, and you have to live with that.
Well, then you do that thing where you let them stay at your place because you feel so bad about it, but they end up being a bad person, kind of a mooch. And so you, Deborah Messing, have to eventually kick them out of your house after already getting them fired from their job. And also, for some reason, you're the guy from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Great episode of Will and Grace.
I thought you were telling me about something that really happened to you.
It really happened on TV.
All right, cool. All right. Let's hear this answer.
Let's do it.
You're fine. You didn't open up a restaurant and pretend to invent Indian food or become a yoga influencer and make up a fake name for your account. You're simply going by the name you were given. And my Indian godparents chose it is a perfectly good explanation for anyone who's confused. And by the way, I suspect confused rather than hurt or horrified is the worst feeling anyone is going to have about this situation.
Okay, interesting. Just minimizing and dismissing the person's feelings. Interesting. Kind of gaslighting them. Interesting.
I thought it was a good answer. Do you actually disagree with this? You feel like if you were born salmon, you would change your name? You'd feel like that was offensive?
If I was born a salmon?
Salmon.
Oh, that's a cool name. Eh, I don't really actually like it that much. I'd probably change it.
You change it?
I'd change it to, like, Blade.
Just because it wasn't cool enough, not because it was Indian. Okay.
All right, you ready for my advice call?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, I'm going with another classic, although we don't bring him in for as much as prolific as he is. Paging Dr. Nerdlove. This is from his own website, not from Kotaku this time. Love, Sex, and Dating for the Modern World. And this one's titled, I Took the Red Pill. Why Am I Still Miserable? And I haven't read all of this, but I read the beginning and went, whoo, this is a heater. So get ready for this one, Paul.
Is this one where we're going to need an explanation for why it's produced YouTube, or is it obvious?
The Red Pill. Where do you think people are watching that?
Oh, okay.
All right. September 21st, 2020. I'm going to keep my name private, but I truly hope that you are having a great day, and I hope your writing has brought fulfillment to your life as well as in the lives of your readers. With that said, I wanted to ask you a question. I essentially want to know if you're serious or if your take on women is just for clicks because it runs so contrary to everything I've seen. To me, it seems pretty obvious that the quote-unquote toxic masculinity you think is evil is 100%, and yes, I do mean 100%, perpetrated, I'm gonna have to edit this because they can't write, perpetrated by women who you seem to love bending the knee for. I found the red pill about a year ago, and I wasn't shocked at all that guys are getting together and confirming these things about women because I already knew all of it was true. I get a decent amount of attention from women. I have the six sixes women want, minus the sweet six-figure income, as I'm still young. I'm no pug, as it were, but I do pretty well. audience, if you don't know what these things are, I also don't know. Maybe we'll have to look them up during the conversation.
The six sixes? I think we shouldn't look it up. I think we should guess. The six sixes are...
Six sixes. Six-inch penis. Six siblings.
Women love it when you have six siblings.
That way when your friends are like, oh, does he have a brother? You can be like, yeah, I do. Got four, five of them things.
Mm. 6 days of playtime on the latest Modern Warfare game.
Six-pack of beer in the fridge. And then besides the six-figure income, and, I guess the last one would
6 hour commute to work.
Yeah, there you go. And he's got all those, except for the six-figure income.
That way they don't have to spend time around you.
I've pretty much decided from what I've seen that modern women are not fit for relationships. They don't know how to even handle the fact that men are not made of stone, yet they constantly neg men to open up, only to lose attraction. They've become walking contradictions. They have little to no temperance, and they sure as fuck can't pair bond or display loyalty.
Wait, can we go back to also he said, I'm no pug, but it was all capitalized, and it came after six sixes. Does he mean pug in the way I would imagine as like, oh, that's an ugly dog? Or is that like an acronym they use in the red pill where it's like, I'm no...
No, pug is a good thing. He's saying I'm no pug, but I still do pretty well.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is it an acronym? I don't know.
I think so, yeah. It has to be. As much as it disappoints me to say, they are pretty much only good for sex because all they do in relationships is try to jam you into a box to fit their delusions. As much as I want to, I can't override my biological need for sex and female companionship. Oh, nice. He would be gay if he could. That's cool. I think if toxic masculinity exists, it exists because women punish men who don't fit into that box, and men are such simps, they bend themselves over backwards to be what women want. I can't keep doing this. I used to have self-esteem. I used to think, hey, I'm outgoing. I'm charming. I'm tall. Good-looking. Personable. Got my degree. I can get women when I need to. But dealing with women in relationships, being charming or socially confident, means nothing because there are guys who are better. Being 6'1 means nothing because there are guys who are taller. Being a former competitive soccer player who has abs and is in shape means nothing because there's some asshole who's more ripped or has harder abs. Having a 7-inch dick doesn't mean anything because there's a bigger one there somewhere. Having a decent job prospect.
How often is he thinking about other men's big, bulging dicks?
Shut up. Let me focus on the bad grammar. Having a decent job prospects doesn't mean anything because there's a guy somewhere who makes more. Bottom line, it's never good enough and I'm sick of it. God knows how shorter, balding, introverted guys feel about women. Yeah, I want to go back to liking myself. I want my self-esteem and my masculinity back. Usually, as soon as I start thinking this way, I meet some girl who will convince me she's different, only to realize she's not, because all women are like that. Do you have any advice on how to override this biological weakness? I feel like I can accomplish so much with my life, but I can't continue to let women get in the way. The manosphere doesn't seem to have any real advice on this issue as far as I can find. It mostly seems like losers who can't get laid with a few men who have extensive experience with women and won't give it up sprinkled in. So I figured I'd ask a beta, male feminist, however you want to brand yourself, IDK, instead. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Looking in the mirror.
What
P.S. Fight Club is the greatest movie of all time, 110% serious. But the Matrix trilogy is kind of overrated, and Joker was ruined by Joaquin Phoenix's complete lack of personality or charisma.
Okay, so obviously fake question, because otherwise this would be the weirdest fucking thing ever, right? Like, why would somebody write in...
Oh, you think it's fake?
Why would somebody write into somebody they hate while being aggressive but sarcastically asking for advice? Is that what's going on?
Because then the normal people he looks for advice aren't giving him the advice he needs.
But why would he trust a beta?
Because he's out of places to look.
Man, you believe in this guy. Okay. Okay.
I'm going to take him at face value like we always do for columns.
It is hilarious, then. It's very funny where he's like, the best advice actually comes from your enemies.
You got to know how they think.
The part where he says, and yes, I do mean 100% of toxic masculinity is perpetrated by women who you seem to love bending the knee for. 100% and doubling down on that number, being like, I mean 100%. Kind of a cocky move, because that's like, you just have to find one counterexample, a none.
Ooh, you're right.
Your whole argument
crumbles.
Oh, so
you're beating him with stats and logic? That's what you're
going to do? Yeah, yeah, I'm Ben Shapiro-ing his ass.
If you're willing to, oh, one of his favorites. If you're willing to accept the AI overview from Google, PUG, in the manosphere context, is an acronym for pickup gurus.
Oh, I'm no PUG, as it were, but I do pretty well. Okay. Yeah, he's no pickup guru, but he does pretty well. Then wait, but that, okay, not saying that that's more proof that it's fake, because we do believe that this is a real question, does seem to contradict
well,
the follow-up that he's not doing well with women or doesn't like, or I guess
what do you
he
mean?
Just,
he's doing fine with women. He just can't get a relationship
because he doesn't like them, or because they
keep putting him into a box of having to be perfect when there's guys with bigger penises and harder abs that he thinks about all the time.
He really did go into an incredible amount of detail of this perfect man. Ugh. The Giga Chad. He's only a Chad. The Giga Chad is stealing all his women.
He's not Iranian.
Do you have any advice on how to override this biological weakness? Well, I don't think you can override being 6'1 or having a 7-inch dick. I think that's pretty much set in stone, unless you're going to get one of those horrifying surgeries that leaves people like basically
where they break your penis so they can extend
it. Yeah, same with the legs. They break your leg bones and they extend it.
Yeah.
Which is like, one of the most famously painful procedures ever created. And like,
but imagine
you can't,
and insurance doesn't cover it.
Yeah, of course. And you can't, basically you can't do anything athletic for the rest of your life because you're obviously incredibly like sensitive to breaking that bone again in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get 1 or 2 inches. Oh my God. Incredible. Yeah, you should do that. That's my advice.
Get the leg, the breaking leg.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll do it for you for free.
Adrian, I'm not a professional doctor. He should get it done in a safe environment.
Okay. All right. It's interesting that he seems to be self-aware enough that the manosphere is for losers.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to deny, though, if you're actually, like, on those forums, right? Like, most
that's
of what they complain
what it is,
about
yeah.
is, like, very, like, desperate and pleading for, like, I'm so sad, I don't know how to deal with this, I feel, like, desperate and lonely.
Get a trad wife.
Presumably, red pill people like trad wives or future trad wives. Trad GF.
Yeah.
Trad, pre-trad wives. But are people who want to be pre-trad wives, I don't know, in this worldview, is that more or less susceptible? Because wouldn't a trad wife want an alpha? And they're, I don't know.
But they're loyal to their man above all else. That's the most traditional thing you can do.
But if you're not their man yet, who are they looking for? The most alpha man of all to make their man.
But his issue isn't getting women. His issue is keeping them around because they're so superficial. And they're hypergamous? Is that the term that they use?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a trad wife? Is there a trad dating app?
If not, we need to make one ASAP because we can make a lot of money with that.
Okay. Okay. And we wouldn't feel at all guilty about pushing
getting weirdos together?
Yeah.
Why does that matter?
Do you have any advice for this man? How can he get the women to stick around? Trad wife?
Yeah. Trad wives. Let's see. What else? What are his other issues with women? It seems like he's concerned about other men more than the women he's dating are.
He's really concerned with other men. That much is obvious.
Many men. Many men have harder abs and bigger peepees than me. Do you have any suggestions about how Harris O'Malley should approach the answering of this question after being called a cuck?
I do like that.
Also, just the confirmation bias of being like, so I got into this really weird part of the internet, and they confirmed all of my beliefs, which I knew were already true.
I do like the ending with the, so is this something Harris O'Malley talks about a lot, that Fight Club is a stupid movie?
Maybe, I could see him being in that kind of nerd, yeah.
I like Fight Club. I don't even know why
it's
people,
a great movie.
I don't know why people became so against it at some point. Well, actually,
I do
he
doesn't
know
like
why.
The Matrix trilogy because it was made by trans people.
Nah, Matrix trilogy also rocks.
He doesn't like Joker because...
No, Joker's just kind of overrated.
Okay. All right. Paul agrees with this guy. Interesting.
Joaquin Phoenix's lack of personality or charisma? Fuck this guy. I can forgive misogyny,
yeah.
But...
you can forgive what?
I can forgive misogyny, but Joaquin Phoenix slander? Fuck this guy. If this is a real person, he really should not be around women or people in general.
Well, his issue is with modern women, so maybe he needs to build a time machine. He's got to get back. Back to the past. Samurai Jack. They constantly neg men to open up, only to lose attraction. They become walking contradictions. Yeah, I just don't know what online reality he's living in. Is that like what? Just like on Twitter when women say that men crying is a turnoff and men get mad about it? Like, I don't know. What are you looking at?
I think it really is like the red pill reality, right?
I like how he uses the term pair bond and a lot about biology, too. It feels like he should get married to a vole. We have pretty good research on how they pair bond and how the oxytocin is released or whatever. Maybe that's what you should do. Get a vole girlfriend.
You know what? If I'm going to give this guy honest advice and not just make fun of him,
don't date for like 5 years. Work on yourself.
But no matter how good he gets, he's never going to be perfect.
Yeah, it's not about becoming perfect. I think it's about realigning your values through achieving a sense of self-worth outside of dating. And then I think the dating pool might look different to him. Do you have any advice on how to override this biological weakness? I feel like I can accomplish so much in my life, but I can't continue to let women get in the way. Don't let them get in the way. No women. 5 years. Reassess.
Ooh, become a monk. And don't nut for that entire 5 years, too.
Ooh, yeah, no fap.
You gotta save your special juice.
No fap, no wap.
Yeah, get back into soccer. See if you can make it professional.
I'm sick of it. God knows how shorter, balding, introverted guys feel about women. More positively than you.
That's true. That's true. Honestly, I think you should just try being gay. It'd probably be pretty cool.
I hate it because it is one of those things where if you call somebody like this gay, people are like, oh, that's your internalized homophobia. Why? I'm not using it as an insult. He seems really preoccupied.
I'm saying you should try it. Yeah.
He seems really preoccupied with other men's hard rippling abs and big dicks.
I think he'll probably get a lot of positive attention, yeah.
I'm not using it as an insult. I think he should try being gay.
Yeah, do that and read some bell hooks.
Read some bell. That actually sounds like what Dr. Nerdlove will actually suggest.
You think so?
Yeah.
I thought he'd recommend reading The Silmarillion or whatever. I don't know what his vibe is.
Read the greatest treatise on female empowerment ever, The Hunger Games.
The Hungy Games. cool. Do you want to hear the answer? I might have to shorten it on the fly.
I hope he has adoy in the answer. Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. Well, I'll give you this much, LITM. You introduced me to a new concept I haven't heard yet. I actually had to look up the six sixes on Google. To spare everyone else trouble, yes, it's exactly as obvious as you would think. Six pack of beer. Six siblings. No, 6 feet tall, 6-inch penis or more, 6-figure salary, 600 horsepower car. That's one of them? That feels like you're really trying to jam it into the framework.
Also feels very culturally reductive to America.
Yeah. 6 months out of a previous relationship. Now, there's a whole lot to unpack here, starting with the fact that 6 foot...
In the Netherlands context, it's a six-gear bicycle.
That's true. Starting with the fact that 6 foot tall dudes are around... Okay, Dr. Nerdlove also can't write. Are less than 10% of the world's population.
More
and if
proof
you needed that
Dr. Nerdlove wrote this question for himself.
Ooh, okay. Oh, and the handwriting's the same, too, when you look at it. And if you needed that to get laid, the human race would have died out long, long time ago. But let's just throw the whole suitcase away. The bigger issue here is that, honestly, you were really close to getting to the root of your problem, but you keep swerving at the last minute. Like, so close. He quotes his thing about the manosphere not being a good place for suggestions. As the saying goes, before you diagnose yourself with depression, make sure you aren't surrounded by assholes. The reason why you're miserable isn't because women aren't punishing men who don't fit into a box, it's because you're taking advice from dudes who A. have no idea what women actually want, B. have convinced themselves that manipulation, head games, and outright emotional abuse are the ways of keeping a relationship, C. tell other men to live up to literally impossible standards in order to get what they want and that they'll never be enough, and D, also tell other men that things like emotional openness, vulnerability, or compassion are weaknesses that make you beta pussy cucks. Your story is one I can recite by heart, man. You struggled meeting women, you had a hard time connecting with folks, and probably got your heart broken a couple times. You, like Mr. Oblivious above, took someone breaking up with you as a personal insult. Something that was done to you maliciously because fuck you, penis, that's why. And like so many other folks, you went to dodgy corners of the internet and found other people complaining about similar experiences. You found it compelling because they were, in your own words, confirming these things about women because I already knew all of it was true. This is quite literally the definition of confirmation bias. He defines confirmation bias with a quote. Da-da-da-da-da. It's an echo chamber full of folks who were ready to feed you what you already believed, and you never stopped to examine it for longer than half a second because, hey, you already believed it. And since then, you've been desperately trying to fit the world into this worldview, and the pain you're experiencing is that it won't conform to what you believe. But look, you're here. You're asking for help, and I'm going to help you. And I'm going to be 100% sincere here. I'm not going to dunk on you or mock you. I want to help you stop hurting. I am, however, going to be blunt. And if you want the pain you're feeling to stop, then you're going to have to let go of your defensiveness, and in the words of Morpheus, free your mind. Now, if you want to get better, let's start with an obvious question. Leave aside the whole six sixes thing for a moment and ask yourself this. Why should any woman want to date someone who clearly doesn't like them? Even if we allow for all of it being true, it's not. And you're this swaggering six-pack with a muscle car and a porn star dick. Why would a woman want to date someone who holds her entire gender in contempt? What is going to entice a woman to want to spend any amount of time with someone who says, women are pretty much only good for sex? What incentive would they have to date someone who insists they have little to no temperance and they sure as fuck can't pair bond or display loyalty? If you want to understand why women don't want to date you, that's a pretty good place to start. No woman out there is intending to spend time with someone who doesn't like them, doesn't respect them, and can't be bothered to actually treat them like people. And before you respond with, well, they don't deserve my respect, you may want to start with the fact that you're starting from a place of contempt. You're setting the entire tone by coming to this from a place where you believe that they should earn respect from you without giving them a single reason for wanting your respect in the first place. You say that they don't display loyalty, but why should they be loyal to you? What have you done to earn it? You say they can't pair bond, but the issue isn't can't, it's won't. Because why in pluperfect fuckery should they want to bond with someone who feels this way? And let me be real, man, you aren't hiding this attitude from anyone. Our second question is just as simple and just as obvious. If you have those sixes, why should women want to date you? I mean, ignoring the whole question of, so exactly how are you trying to tell women about the salary in your penis? Why shouldn't women want to date you? Why should women want to date you specifically instead of some other dude who has the same stats? What is it about you that makes you special and desirable if there's other dudes out there who are just as tall and just as ripped and just as wealthy? Because I hate to break it to you, man, but none of that is special or interesting. As the saying goes, dick is abundant and of low value. What are these sayings that Harris O'Malley knows that nobody else seems to say? What do you bring to the table that would make women want to date you over someone else? Because it isn't just about the numbers. This whole paragraph is literally just parenthetical, so I'm not going to read it. Oh god, there's still so much. Okay, let's see. The next question is, you say men aren't made of stone, but women lose attraction when they open up. Okay, cool. So let's have a hypothetical here. What would happen if you admitted to being scared and lost and terrified to your red pill bros? Not frustrated or angry or resentful, but terrified, knowing that you can't last another day. If you were to break down crying in front of your red pill bros, what precisely do you think would happen? And I don't mean a single man tear, but straight up sobbing because it's all been too much. Would they hug you, let you know that you're not alone and it's going to be okay? Would they comfort you and then, when the tears dried, help you get access to the resources you needed? Or would they call you a pussy, tell you to man up, find your balls, and quit being such a little bitch? If the woman of your dreams broke your heart, would they commiserate with you, support you as you felt the fuck out of your feelings, and help you put the pieces back together? Or would they tell you to forget that bitch and go fuck 10 other girls to get over her? Or, for that matter, would they tell you that this happened because some other dude with better abs and more money was probably giving her the long dick fucking you never could? For that matter, when precisely is the last time you've seen that
Why does it feel like he's using red pill bros as a way to say mean things to this guy? would they call you a fat little slop boy? Would they say you look like a stupid little piggy?
Would they put a bunch of slop in a dog bowl and say, eat it, slop boy? That's what you deserve. For that matter, when precisely is the last time you've been that genuinely open and vulnerable with any of them? Or are women the only people you let yourself open up to? I ask because one of the biggest reasons why men buy into the idea that women lose attraction when they open up isn't because they don't like emotional men. It's because men are taught to be so distanced from their feelings, to force everything down, that they have no healthy emotional outlets. The problem isn't that women don't like emotional men.
Okay, if you don't count punching drywalls as a healthy emotional outlet.
The problem isn't that women don't like emotional men, it's that men tend to repress everything until they vomit all of their feelings at once, and usually on someone they're dating. The problem isn't the emotions are opening up, it's the fact that they dump it all out at once and expect the women in their lives to act as both mother and therapist. And while some women may do the I can heal this broken bird thing, they will almost always do it once, because women have their own lives to live. They don't have the time, inclination, or energy to nurse someone else into emotional maturity. Especially someone who made it clear that he doesn't like or trust them. Speaking of trust, though, that leads to our next question. Could you trust your red pill bros? Not with your life, but say, your deepest, darkest secrets? Could you tell them something deeply personal, maybe humiliating, maybe something like regret or something you're afraid of, and expect them to not only keep it secret, but not use it against you in some way? For that matter, could you trust any woman you date with your red pill bros? Could you, in good conscience, let her hang out with any of those guys you've learned from? Would you trust them not to make a move on your girlfriend, or worse? And if one of them did do something, could you trust any of them to have your back? Or would it be a case that you should have known better, and someone else could pull her? Then clearly, you weren't good enough for her. I mean, just between you, me, and everyone else who reads this column, we all know the answer is no. Because the truth is, the system you've bought into tells you that you can't relax. You can't ever let your guard down because someone else is going to take advantage. After all, one of the surest ways to prove your masculine credentials is to dominate someone else and take theirs. I'm going to skip this next question, talk about hypervigilance, Last question. Who's told you that you're not enough? Who actually told you that you don't measure up? And I don't mean by implication. I mean actually said this to you, in those words. Because I can guarantee you, it wasn't the women you were dating. Free hint, it was your red pill bros, man. The calls are calling from inside the house. But hey, let's put this into something you might understand a little bit more. I'm entirely unsurprised you're a fan of Fight Club. I mean, no shade, so am I. Oh, okay, see, he's nice too. I can't swing a stick without hitting a Fight Club reference around here. I really wasn't kidding. Oh, I didn't realize it was even longer. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna skip the Fight Club stuff.
Wait, what? I wanna hear the Fight Club stuff.
Okay, but like a lot of folks, you missed pretty much the whole point of Fight Club. The most obvious is the fact that Tyler Durden doesn't actually exist, and nobody actually sees him. We see Tyler because of the movie, but nobody else can. When Marla is all hot and bothered and turned on and getting fucked like a champion, she's not getting it from Brad Pitt in all of his carved abs glory. She's getting it from Edward Norton, as schlubby as you can imagine. Just as importantly, there's the fact that Tyler is explicitly what the narrator thinks he's supposed to be. This ain't subtext, it's text. All the ways you wish it could be, that's me. I look the way you want to look, I fuck the way you want to fuck. I am smart, capable, and most importantly, I am free in all the ways that you are not. Except Tyler doesn't actually make things better for the narrator. Trying to be Tyler is what makes everything worse. To the point that the narrator tries to blow his head off instead. You know the first and last time that the narrator is actually happy? When he's in group therapy. When he cries. It may be under false pretenses, and it's an incredibly unhealthy way of getting his needs met, but when he's able to open up, be emotional, and just let everything out, it's the best he's ever felt. Again, this is literally the text of the movie. Even babies don't sleep this well. But once Tyler is an active force in the narrator's life, he doesn't sleep well ever again. He spends the rest of the story in a state of constant sleep deprivation, suffering from the same insomnia he'd been dealing with from the start. It's why he starts having blackouts and why Tyler is able to implement so much of his plans without the narrator's knowledge. Tyler and Fight Club are manifestly making his life worse.
I think Dr. Nerdlove missed the actual message of Fight Club.
Punching's cool.
Which is that, yeah, fighting is cool. Dudes are rad.
Step away from the red pill community. Delete the bookmarks, close your accounts, forget your logins. Spend, let's say, 6 weeks doing a digital detox. You don't need to read bell hooks. What? You don't need to read bell hooks.
Is this the first time we've explicitly had the opposite to our advice?
What the hell? Just spend 6 weeks away from all of the red pill and adjacent communities. Reconnect with friends outside the community. Spend some time taking walks out in nature, even just read a book or two for pleasure. Don't worry about dating, women, or any of the rest. You will be astonished how much better you feel. And from there, well, the next step would probably be talking to a counselor, because you're in a lot of pain, and that's not going to go away on its own. But before you can stop hurting, you're going to have to spit out the red pill, because I hate to tell you this, that pain you're feeling isn't premature enlightenment. It's just poison. And it's been eating you out, and it's been eating you up from the inside.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably good advice for anybody who's part of an ideological internet group, is you gotta get out of that group. No internet ideology is good for you.
Yeah, anything about that long-winded answer?
I thought it was good. I don't know. I feel like he's not escaping the Paul accusations of maybe writing some of the questions himself, because it feels like he has so much to say, it just reads as he's pitching himself the ball to hit what he wants to hit.
All right, cool. You want to get in the third segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
For the record, I think you should read bell hooks. That's just me, though. All right, let's get to this third segment. All right, Paul. So in a very classic Jubilee-type way, we're going to do a middle ground where we're going to come at an argument from opposite sides of the argument. We're going to be randomly aside each time whether or not we're going to be pro or con. We have a whole bunch of essay topics from Kialo EDU, I guess for kids to write essays in their English class. But they are somewhat modern, so it's kind of funny. And you're going to randomly generate a number. I'm going to use that to pick a topic. And then going into it, we're going to debate. Do you want to do three pro, three con, or how do you want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah, that works for me.
All right. First debate, or do you want to be pro or con for this one?
I'll be pro.
All right, and then we're going to get together, talk it out, and learn from each other from empathy. And there's technically 612. I don't want to count that much, so I'm going to kind of just do like a counting by 10 thing, maybe, if you get a big number.
132.
132. All right.
So just randomly scroll through and pick one. About a sixth of the way through the page.
Is it okay for feminists to wear makeup? So I'm on the con side, you're on the pro side.
Wait, I thought I said pro. Okay. Well, okay, I'm on the con side. Oh, okay.
No, you're on the pro side. Yeah.
Okay, and I feel like we should be... If this is going to fit a Jubilee thing, shouldn't it be themed? Like, can you give me my character? What's the location and who are we?
Well, the location is that black room where they film every episode of Middle Ground.
Okay.
And then your character is you're a guy who needed $100 in L.A. and applied to be on a game show about strong opinions on feminism.
Okay. But I'm pro this specific one, so I think it's okay for women to wear makeup.
Yeah. Feminists, not women.
Feminists to wear makeup. Was I selected specifically because in my questionnaire as an LA guy, I said, like, I'm a male feminist. And I think...
Yeah. And you wear makeup, yeah. It said, no, not women, feminists. You keep equating those two things. Men can be feminists.
Okay. I'm on it.
All right. So they just put up the prompt, and now Paul and I are walking to the chair to debate. Wait, you're the pro. You have the opening argument.
You talk first. I'm going to win this.
Oh, and you have a taller chair than I do. God damn it. How did that happen?
So I believe it's okay for feminists to wear makeup because all our greatest feminists have worn makeup. Nancy Pelosi, local icon.
Okay. That's your
San
famous...
Francisco icon, NorCal icon.
That's Bell your best Hooks. Feminist that you're bringing in? Bell Hooks did not.
You don't know that. I'm actually a Bell Hooks scholar. That's my day job.
Interesting.
If you didn't know that's your day job?
You get paid for that?
Yeah. Well, at a university, I'm a scholar. And, of course, Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City.
So your argument is that there are historical examples of feminists doing it. All right. Cool. My name is Jake. I'm a intern at the Daily Wire. So I spend a lot of my days thinking about bell hooks, too. Because hachi-chachi. I think what's important to think about when it comes to, well, first of all, your very weak argument that there's precedent. I don't know what kind of legal argument we're making here, but
you also forgot the first part of my argument where you talked first.
Well, I do concede that point. I will say this, that I think that when it comes to wearing makeup, feminists who are normally intersectional in the issues that they're interested in are usually libs, and they're usually... Marxists, and they are usually also concerned with things like climate change. And I think hyper-consumerism of makeup that is produced in a way that damages the environment, in a way that is polluting our environment when it is improperly disposed of. Sephora throws away millions upon millions of gallons of toxic and unnatural products and chemicals into our waterways, into our soils. And I think any conscious feminist who also takes an ecological approach to the way that they think about the world would be abhorred by the idea of anyone using a product that's so inherently materialistic and terrible for our environment. And I don't think that feminists should be wearing makeup.
Is this a Daily Wire right wing? Why are you concerned about the environment? And
I'm saying if that's your worldview.
Oh, you're putting yourself in my shoes.
I'm debating based on the principles. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Well,
I can do that. Because I'm able to think logically about these things.
It just seems weird for somebody who doesn't even buy into the premise of feminism to be arguing.
So to be clear, your arguments so far have been historical precedent and ad hominem attacks on my character. And the fact that you spoke
second. I didn't say anything about you being an ad homo, okay? I'm sure you guys have normal ads on the Daily Wire.
Hey, sponsor me. I'll take it.
I feel like makeup, when you think about it, it's the furniture of the face.
Makeup's the furniture of the face. That's, you know, I've never thought about it that way. Lipstick's kind of like a chair. Mascara, kind of like a bed.
And you got to rearrange it sometimes. I don't really know about all that fancy shit you were saying, but sometimes you gotta switch it up. Like, you have a look and you change it up. I don't get why feminists can't do that. I don't really know where you're coming from.
You didn't address any of the points that I made.
Yeah, they were really boring, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
They were deeply annoying.
Well, you're deeply unserious.
I am.
And you're not approaching
silly.
This in good
you
faith.
You clocked me. I am a little silly.
You're a silly goose. So I'm gonna say that, once again, that I think that when it comes to feminists wearing makeup, I think that, it is, you know, people say men are the biggest liars. Women are the biggest liars. Cause, you know, wearing high heels, you're not that tall. Wearing makeup, you're not that pretty. You know what I mean? Folks.
I disagree.
So it's deception.
I disagree with that. Is your concept of women in high heels, you're not that tall? When you see a man in a shirt, are you like, your skin color isn't blue? Is that
okay?
Your,
okay, so is that, do you have a problem issue? With me now, or do you have a problem with Chris Rock?
Chris Rock said that? Why would you say that here on Jubilee? You're stealing money out of his mouth doing his bits on this public platform.
Because it's a good argument. It's a good point.
In fact, we're going to stop talking about feminists wearing makeup now. We're going to talk about how you're a fucking piece of shit.
Okay, all you're right. You're taking bread out of Chris radical Rock's left
mouth. You're taking
to do.
Bread out of Tony Rock's mouth. How is he going to eat if Chris Rock doesn't
have
a
paycheck? Is that his son's
paycheck?
Name? Do you know what his son is named?
No, his brother, who's less famous and also does stand-up.
Oh, I didn't know about that. That's funny. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
And this is how we come together, feminist,
anti-feminist.
Yeah, we both love discussing how Tony Rock is kind of a sad character.
I'm not an anti-feminist. I'm actually a Hegelian, but let's talk about Tony Rock.
I feel like a Hegelian would know about Tony Rock. Something isn't adding up here.
Oh, shit, he got me. I'm also undercover.
As an anti-Hegelian?
Yeah. All right. Well, I concede. You win the debate.
Thank you.
All right. Next topic.
561.
Okay, near the bottom, and wherever my mouse lands.
If it's one that's too close, like anything to do with women or feminism, let's switch it up by selecting one around it.
All right, was Macbeth a victim of fate?
Select one around it, I am not.
Was Shakespeare a feminist? Was Nebuchadnezzar II really a good leader? Let's see, hold up. Was Langston Hughes' poetry more praising or critical of America? Was Brexit a good idea?
Okay, so now I'm all against.
Right. Oh, and I have to be pro and you have to be con. Okay. Hey, how's it going? My name's James. I'm a British man from the Western Isles.
Why'd you start speaking with an American accent?
I thought it would make you feel more comfortable. You know, like in movies where the aliens start off like looking like humans, that way you're not scared of like their, you know, what's the word? Their actual form that would boggle your mind.
Boy, should I put on my best British accent then?
I mean, I've already kind of lost my accent too, a little bit. I think I went Australian for a second.
Well, I just want to make you feel comfortable because I'm a nice guy.
Well, you know, you Yanks, you guys have invaded all of our TV and media and stuff. I'm used to seeing Americans everywhere. I'm certainly used to hearing them everywhere and smelling them.
and so that's why you like Brexit, because you're trying to get rid of me from
a
being
little
able
bit.
To move
so
into...
I'll give a little bit of my background. So I am a t-shirt designer. And do you remember like certain like Super Bowls where you see that like, and I do follow a little bit of the footy on your side of the pond, but the Super Bowls where like you make t-shirts for whether or not either team wins, that way you can have shirts immediately available.
And then we send them to third world countries for the one that didn't
win.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the money for that. So I put all of my money into Brexit winning shirts. And it's been really good for me that I did that. And I think it means Brexit's a good idea. I haven't really checked other stuff going on. I'm not really political, no politics here. But when it comes to me, Brexit, clearly a good idea. It worked out great for me, isn't it?
And here's the thing. I'm an executive at Sara Lee, and we do a lot of business out in the UK. And I'm terrified.
Yeah. I get a lot of Sara Lee at Sainsbury's most of my days.
I'm terrified that our sales are going to plummet when you pass these bread exit laws in the UK. No bread. Well,
that's what you thought Brexit was a clumsy portmanteau of bread exit.
Is it not?
I'm not sure. I just make the shirts. I'm not really, I don't really know.
I thought you didn't know because you're just working on the t-shirts.
I don't. So yeah, if that's what you say it is, I'm sure that's what it is. I have been noticing the bread prices going up.
And here's the thing. At Sara Lee, and in the bread game widely, we have this concept of the 6/6 of bread.
Ooh, okay.
You're going to want to slice it at least 6 times.
Okay.
There's the 6 biggest countries you export to, UK number one amongst them.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the others are obvious. They just kind of, I'm sure you can fill in the blanks, you know, 6-inch penis.
Okay.
600 horsepower and so on. Those are the 6/6 of bread. And so the UK is, it's a very big country for us. So this bread exit has us really worried at Sara Lee.
Brexit that happened, I think, 4 years ago is just now starting to worry you over at Sara Lee.
I mean, bread famously.
And you're one of the executives there at the Sara Lee. And you also refer to it as the bread game, as one of the executives at Sara Lee. You got a real hip-hop attitude to you.
I mean, we like to be playful with it because you might not know this. I don't know if this has reached grime music yet, as you guys call it. But
that's true.
In American hip-hop, bread can mean money, too. So we kind of play with that a little bit.
You know, it's actually that's interesting. So grime actually has more of a ancestral relationship to electronic music in the UK than it does actually hip hop. It's not exactly UK hip hop.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
See, these are the type of that. Cultural misunderstandings that can really hurt our business in the UK.
Oh, well, if you need someone to make shirts for you guys and also to be like a cultural collaborator, we could.
Well, that's concerning because I hear you have a lot of pro Brexit shirts. And why would we at Sara Lee want pro bread exit shirts?
Because you sell them to bad people and it makes the coals look bad.
I'm convinced. You have a deal.
So I just made a big bag off of Brexit. I think it's a good thing. I stand by my opinion. Handshake. Toodaloo. Cheerio. In it. Governor.
Congratulations.
All right. So far, the pros have won both debates.
All right, I guess I'm back to pro on the next one, which is 559.
Oh, okay, so pretty close to where we were. Okay, let's see. Should tipping culture be a thing of the past? God, why am I getting the wrong side of all these debates? You know, it's actually not really situated in a pro or con, but it should tipping culture be a thing of the past is the question. So you're pro tipping culture being a thing of the past.
Okay. So you are on the right side of this one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Or I don't know. Hi, Kevin. Pleasure to meet you.
Howdy, my name's Connie. I'm from Savannah, Georgia. I'm a waitress there at a Waffle House.
Oh, that's interesting because I'm a waiter.
Oh, where?
Washington, D.C.
I meant more like the why am I going British again? I meant more like the establishment, but sure. Okay, Washington, D.C. Oh, you're in them big city. You're in one of them Washington types. Okay. Out of touch, some would say.
I don't understand how, as a waitress, you can be pro-tipping. As you can see, my wrist is severely injured. Every day, flipping that iPad back and forth. Carpal tunnel. Can't use this wrist anymore. My other wrist is at 50%. I don't know how long I'm going to keep it.
That's your opening argument.
Yeah.
Interesting. We don't use iPads at Waffle House. We actually just use pen and paper.
How do you ask somebody for a tip without flipping the iPad?
Usually, if they don't leave money on the table, I give them one of these.
Leave money on the table?
Yeah.
What's that?
That's how we do things in Savannah. You don't know what tables are.
No.
You know this guy named Drew? I feel like you kind of remind me of a guy named Drew.
Don't know Drew.
So what establishment did you say you work for?
Lizard Thicket.
You were, that's South Carolina only, I'm pretty sure. Do they get one of them in D.C.'s?
No, it's a coincidental name, I assume. There's a D.C. one.
You know, that is true. I was once in Florida and I saw a clothing shop called Lizard's Thicket. So, you know what? I believe that. That seems like it could be true. And this Lizard's Thicket doesn't have tables.
What's a table?
Tablas? Are we saying that right? I don't even know.
We have tablets, sound like, not tables.
So it's a okay. And so you're pro tip. No, you're anti tip. And I'm pro tipping because that's where I get most of my money from. I only make about $2 an hour at the Waffle House. It barely covers taxes.
They need to pay you more. My company needs to pay me more for all these wrist injuries.
I assure you, sir, if they could, I'm sure they would. They'd do me good. But the customers are the ones that are really paying my bills, and, you know, I could work a fancy corporate job. I have 6 PhDs, but, like, the tipping money is better. On a good busy night, I'm making more money than I would at some kind of corporate job as a little desk jockey. Why are you trying to take away my money? I'm good at my job, and people tip me well.
I just think it's the add-on effects, the echo effects of constantly having to flip that iPad.
You're really focused on this iPad, which I don't think every company is that.
How do you tip without an iPad? An iPhone? With the tip screen? So they can select 20, 25, 30%?
Have you considered not doing a rotating situation? Can't you do a thing where, like, it's just already set up on the one side and then you have your own monitor?
You're one of those idealists, aren't you? I love that. But we live in this world.
No, sir. I take offense to that. I am a materialist. I believe in a materialist view of understanding our situation.
Materialist?
And I'm not talking about the latest A24 movie, although Hachi Chachi, that was a spicy one. Couldn't take the grandkids to see that one.
Wait, you have
grandchildren? And you know how I paid for my ticket? Yeah? You know how I paid for my ticket? My tips. Am I not supposed to have grandchildren now? Is that what the woke left is telling you?
Look, by the time my second wrist is out of commission, what am I supposed to do? Flip the iPad with my feet? I just don't understand how this is a workable solution permanently. Tippin's gotta go.
Tippin's gotta go. Because, I mean, if you did it with your feet, I think people would think that's pretty cool. I think they'd probably tip you more.
That would be a cool trick to learn.
You karate kick it every single time? Come on, man. Now, I fear not the man who's done 1,000 kicks one time. I fear the man who's done one kick of an iPad 1,000 times.
I didn't know you were wise.
Well, that's Bruce Lee right there. And you know how Bruce Lee was tipped? How Bruce Lee made his money? Tips.
I don't think that's true, if I have to be honest with you. Give me 5 examples of how Bruce Lee was tipped.
Enter the Dragon. When he gets his ass kicked, he gets a tip. Chuck Norris kicks his ass and says, "Here's a tip, honey. Stop wearing the yellow. It's a bad color on you." So there's 2 examples.
Well, I can fill in the rest.
And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when he got portrayed poorly, his family got some tips from that. Quentin Tarantino came to their house and left some money on the table.
That goes against what I feel like I've heard about Quentin Tarantino. Not like the nicest guy. Not really like
He'd
a sappy sort
of... He'd give you a big tip
of...
if you showed your feet while you were kicking that iPad.
And he has. That's actually something that's happened. He's walked into the restaurant and asked to see my feet and left a massive tip.
And there you go. If tips were abolished, how would you get those news stories about a guy leaving $1,000 to a waitress?
Oh, those are delightful.
And then she gets sued by the rest of the staff saying that they deserve some of that tip money as well.
Is that a story that's happened?
Well, some places split tips. At my Waffle House, we don't.
I don't know if that's worth suing somebody over. It feels like the cost of hiring a lawyer might really dig into that $1,000.
I don't know. I don't do that. I just slang waffles all day. And the way I make my money is I put my cleavage out and, man, put a couple dollar bills right in there.
Well, let me end this with a tip for you, honey. You ain't classy.
But I got Southern charm and gumption, and that's all I need. And tip money. It ain't taxed. Are you supposed to pay taxes on that? You know what? Delete that. Can we delete that? All right, who won that one?
I think you did.
I think you conceded. Okay. All right, that's good.
I think you outclassed me.
Should e-scooters be allowed in city centers? All right, I'm pro and you're con.
Okay.
Hey, what's up? My name's Kyle. I work for Lime, and I'm here today to debate the position that e-scooters should be allowed in city centers.
Hi, I'm John. I also work for Lime, and I'm here to debate the position that the e-scooters shouldn't be allowed in city centers.
Oh, wow. That's very brave of you. So, first point, obviously, people like the scooters because they serve a function. Getting around cities can be tough. Sometimes Ubers are expensive, and, you know, sometimes a scooter is a nice way to get, you know, 10 blocks down the street in a matter of minutes instead of, you know, an hour. And I think that is just as important in the middle of a city as it is in the outskirts of the city, if anything more important, to have that for people with issues with mobility and who also want to look super rad while going around town. So that's my opening argument. I think it's obviously a important and useful thing to have around, and I don't know how we went without it.
I think the clutter they create inside of our cities on the sidewalks and parks and anywhere else that people will just leave them unattended is destroying our beautiful city and cities. I believe that the e-waste created by scooters, those batteries don't just come from anywhere. Obviously, they're mass manufactured, and they're not the highest quality. They degrade pretty quickly, is creating a lot of environmental
issues. And that's an issue with city centers?
Well, it's a problem with how many e-scooters exist, and which is...
And this is how you make your livelihood?
What? No.
I thought you worked for Lime Scooters.
Oh, sorry. Big Lime. I'm a marketing executive for Key Limes.
You're a... Oh, okay. All right. I do like them. You don't have to work that hard. They're pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, they really sell themselves.
That makes sense. I mean, that's the only thing you can use to make that one type of pie.
It's an easy job. Are we done with your little attempt at derailing me? Can I go back to my points?
Sir, I promise you I'm not trying to rail you or derail you.
Well, maybe I would like it if you did, though.
Why? Please stop unbuttoning your shirt. This is a debate. This is professional. Jubilee? Where's the producer? I feel uncomfortable. If I had an e-scooter right now, I'd scooter away.
All right, but you're cute. Here's my number for later, no matter how this goes.
All right, we'll take it.
3, they're a public danger. These little whippersnappers riding through the city full speed, they're going to hurt themselves, and they're going to hurt people they crash into.
No one who isn't old enough to have a driver's license should be using an e-scooter on their own.
A young whippersnapper can have a driver's license.
I'm saying that they should. They know the rules of the road. Anyone who knows the rules of the road is allowed to use a scooter. I don't take kindly to this.
because they will still ride on the sidewalk. Often that's actually allowed in certain city centers, and they're not on the road, and they're not doing it safely.
But what about this? It makes you look really cool and rad.
You know what else makes you look cool? Eating an old-fashioned key lime pie.
Is that germane to the conversation?
I'm saying there's other ways people could look cool.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Would I rather walk down the street eating a nice key lime pie or ride a scooter? Could do both.
Mm. In fact, that would be dangerous, but at Key Lime Marketing Headquarters, we do still endorse it.
Despite my play to mobility access, you're trying to outwoke me by saying that them covering sidewalks and stuff is an actual disability disservice.
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, people in wheelchairs often don't have the clearance room to let a scooter pass.
You know what's better than a wheelchair? Two scooters taped together.
I concede that point. I don't concede the entire argument, but that is true. That's cool.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm glad we can get there. I'm glad we can agree on something.
Well, that's what this whole show is about. Thank you to the good people at Jubilee for having us.
Yeah. Thank you, Jubilee. Yeah. I am a Nazi, by the way. I forgot to say that. I don't know if that's important for this, but...
We're on Jubilee. We're both Nazis.
Yay. Come on, my brother.
Come on now.
I always kind of suspected Key Lime was racist.
I don't even know what I was saying. I'm just so excited to be here with a fellow Nazi.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, we got better things to do. Let's not worry about this.
Jubilee really did bring us together. Let's dap up and head out of here for some great gay sex.
And now we have a huge audience that we can talk to in our new YouTube channel, Lime and Lime.
Lime and Lime. Let's do it.
All right, brother. Let's get out of here. All right. Big fact, no cap. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, let's do it. Big fact.
Now that we've solved the empathy crisis.
When it comes to produced YouTube, get yourself YouTube Premium. This shit just is not worth it if you're watching ads.
Oh, shit, that's so true. And my no cap is, fuck what YouTube you're making, who produced you? A guy came up to me the other day and said, hey, I made this YouTube video, it's the YouTube video of the year. I said, if LP didn't make it, then get the fuck out of here.